Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So Jake Adelstein was a reporter for a while for the Yomiuri Shimbun, the number one Japanese newspaper. His misadventures, I think he would call them that, as a reporter covering the Yakuza, the Japanese mafia, led to his life being in danger, among many other things. He is here to talk about his new book, Tokyo Vice, an American reporter on the police beat in Japan. Jake, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's nice to be here.
You grew up in Missouri and decided to go to college in Japan. How come?
Well, yeah, Missouri is a nice place to be, but after 18 years there, I think I was ready to see a little more of the world.
Nice place to be from.
Well, nice place to be from.
And you ended up staying in Japan and becoming the only American reporter for the Japanese paper, Yomiuri Shimbun. How did it all transpire?
Well, you know, of course, when I got to Japan and I saw that they actually had a national health insurance plan that worked and you could get good medical care, of course, I decided I'd never want to leave the country, which is a joke, but it's also true. I liked Japan. It's a very interesting culture. And getting into the newspaper was a wonderful surprise.
You wore the wrong suit to your interview. Tell me that story.
Okay. Now, actually, fashion tastes have changed, but at the time in Japan, you only wore black suits to funerals. When I went to buy my first suit, not having one all through college, I went and bought the suit that was on sale, which I thought was a reifuku. Reifuku being like a kind of like, you know, dinner party suit. But in actuality, I bought the mofuku, which was for funerals. So when I showed up in my black tie and my black suit at the school newspaper office, everyone made fun of me for being a clueless idiot because obviously no one shows up to a job interview in a suit for a funeral.
And another cultural difference that you had to absorb was knowing what it meant when you get to a crime scene where there was a body and somebody had their shoes and socks on or shoes and socks off.
Yeah, typically when Japanese people, I mean, just like when Japanese people enter a home, they take off their shoes and their socks, sometimes just their shoes. When people kill themselves, they tend to take off their shoes too. So if you see a body with no shoes on, you can usually assume that that's a suicide, unless, of course, it's staged to look like a suicide.
Your beat included writing a lot about the mafia, the Yakuza. Tell us about them. Who are the Yamaguchi-gumi? That's the largest group, right?
The Yamaguchi-gumi have been around for six generations, and they are kind of the Walmart of organized crime. There are 86,000 known mafia members in Japan right now, and the Yamaguchi-gumi is about 40,000. That gives them about half of the market. They're centered in Kobe, where they have an entire city block, like a fortress, for their offices. And they're involved in all kinds of financial activity, much more than just loan sharking and protection money. As a matter of fact, last year, Lehman Brothers Japan was ripped off for $350 million in a very elaborate fraud, of which the Yamaguchi-gumi played some significant part.
That was the illegal fraud in which Lehman Brothers was ripped off, as opposed to some others we may know.
Yeah. They were the victims in that one.
Does a mafia serve a different function in society? That's probably a funny way to put it. But role in the economy or role in Japanese life than what we think of as the mafia here?
Well, first of all, the mafia in Japan is very, it's a legal entity like the Rotary Club. It's not illegal. So,
what do you mean the mafia is legal?
Okay, for example, I brought this with you. I'll have this over. Here's a mafia Yakuza fan magazine.
Okay, which I can't read a word of because it's in Japanese.
Here's a list of the 90 top members of the Yamaguchi-gumi, including their biographies and past criminal records.
And you can buy this on any newsstand.
Buy this on any newsstand. A comic book devoted to the lives of the current leader and my favorite Yakuza, Goto Tadamasa.
And who buys these things? Who's the fan base?
Well, the fan base is the Yakuza, their family, and your typical white-collar worker who dreams of having a glamorous life, doing whatever the hell he wants, having lots of chicks, lots of money.
Listeners, anybody else familiar with the Japanese mafia or wants to call in with any questions for Jake Adelstein, an American who worked for the Yomiuri Shimbun on the police beat in Tokyo? His new book is called Tokyo Vice, an American reporter on the police beat in Japan. Let me go to the policing. How do you think big city policing is different in Japan than here in New York or elsewhere in the United States.
Here, I'll hand you this sweet I brought over to you. It's some sweet and sour squid while I'm answering the question.
All kinds of props. I like sweet and sour squid.
I'm glad not many people do. My kids love it. First of all, the Japanese have the police box system. So almost in every street corner in Japan in a major city, you have the police somewhere standing there, you know, giving directions. So the police presence is huge. That's certainly a deterrent to crime. And the police aren't in their cars isolated from the public. They're walking. They're on bicycles. And the other thing, of course, about the police in Japan that is much different from the way it is here is that they tend to be friendlier and cultivate a more friendly image. I mean, Tokyo police even have a mascot named Pipo-kun.
So you were the only American reporter on the beat. How did it affect your reporting and your ability to report?
Well, at first there were some adjustment issues. The first time I went to the Omiya police station where I was assigned to, I went in to say hello to the vice captain, and he assumed that I was an Iranian that had escaped from the holding cells and called a bunch of cops to, like, grab me before I could escape. That made sort of a crazy tone. But in general, once you demonstrate that you understand the subtleties of Japanese culture and that you can be polite and well-behaved and that you understand the cop mindset, I didn't have any problem as a police reporter.
The fact that you're Jewish helped you get your first story published, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it helped because I was working on a story about a bunch of Israelis that were being shaken down by the Japanese mafia because they were working on the streets selling trinkets and stuff that they'd bought from Nepal. So, yes, the Jewish thing certainly helped.
And did being a foreigner hinder your reporting?
No. And almost every time it was actually a plus because you're a foreigner, so you stick out. Especially with this nose, I really stick out. And that makes you memorable. And you also attract kind of an oddball element of the cops, the guys that aren't happy with their jobs or that are such straight arrows that are so uncorruptible that they're treated as pariahs by their counterparts.
A Yakuza member told you that you are both in the information industry. What did he mean by that?
This was a great guy, Kaneko Naoya, a senior member of the Sumiyoshikai. And what he said was, to me, the first time we met, was we were both in the information industry. As a reporter, my job was to find out embarrassing secrets that people didn't want public. And as a Yakuza, his job was to make sure that I didn't write those secrets and get paid for it. So what I'm trying to do my job, he's trying to prevent me from doing the job, suppressing information and collecting blackmail money.
So have you become more like the Yakuza as a result of your experiences in Japan?
Well, I mean, if you hang around Yakuza cops and Yakuza all the times, of course you're going to learn from them. I mean, you know, like anything, they have their own knowledge and wisdom. So I suppose that I've become a little bit like them.
Ben and Carol Gardens, you're on WNYC with Jake Adelstein, author of Tokyo Vice. Hello.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I lived in Japan for about 5 years, and three of them were spent in Yokohama working in bars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's Inagawakai territory.
Yeah, especially in the Chinatown area of Yokohama. And which there was a lot of gangsters and Yakuza around. But specifically, I have a question. We had always heard stories that when the World Cup came to Japan, which now was about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, mm-hmm. that the Yokohama police, fearing kind of drunken, belligerent foreigners, actually went into cahoots with the Yakuza to form security around the stadiums. I wonder if you know if there's any truth to that.
There is an element of truth to that, yes. I don't think they signed a formal alliance. I think the Yokohama police just said to the Inagawakai, which that's their turf, could you make sure that, you know, the soccer hooligans behave themselves if we don't get there first?
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Ben, thank you. Phil in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Phil.
Yes, hi. I want to ask the author, it's my understanding that the Yakuza and other gangs all own firearms and use them, despite the almost universal ban of firearms in Japan. So since many liberals in the United States would love to see a universal ban of firearms, I'm interested in your perspective, given the fact that where these things exist. The bad guys still always get guns and use them anyway.
Well, actually, I mean, it is true that unless you're a cop, the only people with guns are Yakuza. But at the same time, they've made the penalties for using a gun so odious. Longer prison sentences for owning one, another sentence for firing one, a stronger sentence for injuring someone with it. That lately you see the Japanese samurai sword making a comeback as a weapon of assassinating your rivals. There was an incident a couple weeks ago where an Inagawa Kai member had his jaw sawed off with a sword and died. So if you make guns, the penalties for owning guns so horrible that, you know, using what guarantees like 40 years in prison, even the Yakuza are a little reluctant to use
them. So wait, do you get a shorter prison term for killing somebody with a samurai sword than you do with a firearm?
Absolutely the weapon of choice for the smart Yakuza.
Really? Because you would actually get a shorter prison term potentially.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, there's it's just a straight violation of the Juto Hoihan. Of the sword and firearms law. You know, there's no aggravating factors there.
You even report on the sex industry and its connections to the Yakuza. And I say even because you write about ending up spending a night as a host and getting paid for sexual favors. Do I understand this correctly?
No. That is completely wrong. I did not get paid for doing it for any sexual favors as a host.
How close did you get?
A host has nothing to do with sex. A host is kind of like a fake boyfriend. The woman comes in, you pour the drinks, you light her cigarettes, you charm her, and make her feel like she's got a boyfriend, and try to get her to buy the expensive champagne.
Like an escort service in the legit sense.
Yeah, like an escort service. I was never paid for sexual favors as a host. In college, when I was working as a massage therapist, I might have crossed the line of legitimate massage therapy, but I prefer not to go there.
This may be more than we want to know. But what about the sex industry and its connections to the Yakuza, or how is that different from here in the United States?
Okay, you know, the Japanese adult entertainment industry is very legal. Except the one act that is forbidden is actual sexual intercourse. So, you know, it's a family radio station, so without going into details, every sexual act besides actual intercourse between a man and a woman can be legally sold and offered as a service. There is an anti-prostitution law, but it essentially has no punishment for the customer or the prostitute herself or himself. So it's a very vague thing. The Yakuza make their money on human trafficking or services where they actually have actual intercourse guaranteed as part of the bill.
Do they have debates about stop and frisk and things like that, police practice against young Japanese? I guess there aren't the minority groups probably in Tokyo, to have an ethnic or racial flashpoint like here, but nevertheless, those kinds of practices?
You know, Japan is a 99% homogenous society. There is a lot of discrimination against Korean Japanese, many who were brought over as slave labor during the Second World War, and also an outcast class of Japanese called the Burakumin, or Dowa. And not surprising, a lot of those people end up becoming Yakuza.
And in terms of the police beat in general, just to stop street crime, are there big debates in Tokyo about whether the police are too aggressive?
No. No one in Japan ever says the police are too aggressive. However, there have been a number of cases where people have been forced into confessing to crimes they didn't commit, which was later revealed that the police had browbeat them during the 23 days of interrogation police are allowed in Japan, and that has become an issue.
23 days of interrogation?
Oh, yes, and you can't have your lawyer present either.
30 seconds left. You left the paper after your life and your family's lives were threatened by the Yakuza, and yet you continue to report and tell some stories from afar. So now, after all that intensity, you moving back to Missouri?
I don't think so. I'm committed to some people in Tokyo. I'll keep going in and out of there for the rest of my days.
All right, Jake Adelstein, American, grew up in Missouri, was a reporter for the Yomiuri Shimbun, the number one Japanese newspaper. He has now compiled some of his stories into a book, Tokyo Vice, an American reporter on the police beat in Japan. Thank you very much.